Welcome back to Fishnets and Philosophy. This is your host, Mix Bell Morrigan. And once again, I'm taking you on a journey into the exploration of the question, why horror? Where each week, myself and a different guest jump in to try and unpack this question. And today I am joined by returning guest, once again, the wonderful Kat Hughes, who I can see is entertaining a cat in her on her end right now. And so before we jump into the question, can you just kind of introduce yourself, what it is that you do, and kind of your connection to horror?
Yeah, so my name is Kat Hughes. I'm a film journalist, sort of specializes in horror, primarily writing for the HollywoodNews.com. And my assistant, who you may hear in the recording, is called Ratchet, Ratchet Shikari. She loves trying to get herself famous. So I guess this is what she's trying now. But yeah, I've been in love with horror since I was young, thanks to my mum. So I'm looking forward to getting into this.
Amazing. Thank you. Well, then that's the lead into the first question, which I do always like to kick off these conversations with, just because I always love what someone's answer is going to be. So as you said, your mom was the one that got you into horror. So what's the first horror film that you remember watching? And then a slightly adjacent spin-off from that, because sometimes the answers can be different. What was the horror film that made you a fan of horror?
So I think the first one I sort of remember watching was Gremlins. I mean, this was pretty much, I was born in 84, and this would have been whenever it came out onto video. So I would have been like, I don't know, like two or three or something back then. And that was the first one I sort of remembered watching, and remembered sort of like then going to go to bed and checking under the bed and everything, like Randall Peltzer warned you to do before at the end. And then it kind of spiraled from there. I'd catch bits and pieces of whatever my mum was watching if I couldn't sleep, to a degree. So I caught bits of like Ghoulies and Dolls. I remember Dolls really scared me. I didn't watch it all, and I haven't seen it since. But I just remember there being this one scene in the warehouse with dolls on shelves, and then the dolls started to come off of the shelves. And it was as a kid who like had dolls and things around the house, it was pretty scary. And I mean, in terms of what got me into horror, I think I've always watched horror on and off. I mean, I was more of a sci-fi horror kid. So like I saw the Alien series and Terminator and Predator films when I was like 7 or 8. So which everyone's like, oh, it was very young, but I guess it was normal to me. So I sort of started off in sci-fi horror, and then it was about early teens that stuff like Nightmare on Elm Street and Halloween started being watched. And I guess it was probably all of the films that were around during my teen years that really sort of cemented my love. So it's not necessarily one, but just the collection of like Scream, I Know It's Last Summer, The Craft, they were all out when I was sort of like 14, 15, 16. So I guess it was those that sort of were my gateway horrors in a way. And then, yeah, from then I just continued down the rabbit hole.
Amazing. And I love how you mentioned Terminator, and I can see like right behind your head is like a Terminator bust, and it looks fantastic, just glittering in the sunlight. but I love what you say there about how it was like which ones were kind of coming out when you were a teenager and stuff like that, because I think when it comes to so many horror fans, and that's what I've loved about this series so far, everyone I've been chatting with, I've been noticing the pattern that it's either when someone's younger, as like a child, they either have like a guiding hand, like parental figure or sibling who's like, I'm going to introduce you to this world, wonderful world of horror. Or it's the case that you might be from a more conservative background and it's actually an act of rebellion. I think it's always like 50-50. It's really when you're in your teens is when you kind of think that's when you find the genres that you have a love for, and you kind of cement your passion as in the ones that you'll always return to. And so stemming from that, I want to know for yourself, like I know that I'd say sci-fi horror is probably one of them, is that you've already mentioned it, but what are your kind of favorite horror subgenres? But more particularly, and this is the one that I always like am fascinated with, why do you love them so much? Like, what do you get from the subgenres that you're a fan of?
I mean, I'm sort of a fan of all horror to a degree. I guess teen horror is probably like one of my favorites, probably because it was sort of one of the first ones that got me into it. And I don't know. I mean, I'm in my sort of like mid to late 30s now, but I still love a good CW show. I'm sort of trying desperately to sort of like, cling on to those teen years for as long as I can. And teen horror is a way to do it. And I think I'm kind of hopeful that it's sort of coming back a little bit at the moment, which is quite nice with stuff like Bodies, Bodies, Bodies and Freaky and Happy Death Day. There definitely seems to be another through. Because they're just fun, they're nice, easy watches. They're not going to sort of like cripple you too much emotionally. But then on the same hand, I really enjoy body horror. There's something really interesting about you not being in control of your body and the different ways that films explore that I think is really interesting, because it's not something that they can do really in other genres. It is only, I mean, I guess you could argue that Body Swap are in a way a sort of body horror, like Freaky Friday or something. She suddenly wakes up in the body of her mother. I'd be interested to, I mean, I know Freaky sort of tried to do that, but that was like in a fun slasher way. But I'd almost be intrigued to see sort of like a Freaky Friday,
Just
but
straight
yeah,
drama
like,
horror.
yeah.
Yeah, no, really interesting. And actually, that's one of the, like, I never know if to say if like body horror is like a subgenre or if it's just something that occurs in subgenres. I never know how to classify it myself, because that's the thing, you can't really pin these things down. But body horror as something within horror films is the one type of thing that just gets me. Like, it always squicks me out, it always makes me uncomfortable, it makes me squirm. Like, I rewatched Naya Da Costa's Candyman the other day, and like the body horror in that, just like watching it with my dad, I was just like convulsing, like, nope, I can't do it. And like, for me, I think it really stems from the fact that like I've been out as kind of non-binary, gender queer for 2 and a bit years now. Before then, my body itself was really kind of like the location of horror for me, because I didn't really understand it. Like, it didn't correlate with my experiences, and I didn't know why. So yeah, I think that's probably one of the reasons why body horror is always just something that's just like, oh, no. But it is a intensely powerful subgenre. Like, it just affects everyone. And I think similarly, it's probably why teen horror is really popular, because everyone can relate to being a teenager and those like struggles that where something feels like it's the worst thing in the world when probably it isn't, but it's something everyone relates to. Whereas once you kind of get into your 20s and 30s, everyone's experiences diverge so much. So it makes it harder to relate in that sense. But I want to know, as someone who's a fat loves all horror, I'd imagine the answer is probably fluid and flux. But I want to know, when it comes to watching horror, like, do you have kind of like hard lines, delineations, like on one side is horror, on another it isn't? Or for you, when you're watching it, does it more kind of, is it more fluid and flux?
I think it's more fluid. I mean, this whole argument about horror films having to be scary and stuff, I don't agree with that. That to me is a subset of the genre. There are like your creepy films, your ghost films, but then there's just other stuff that just sort of gets under your skin in different ways. It's like body horrors, they're not necessarily scary until you start to think about the fact that, oh, well, what would I do if my body started doing this or doing that. And I think a big part of that helps with, because I cover Fright Fest a lot, and watching that, there's always, I mean, it happened at this year's Fright Fest, there's the, oh, that's not horror crowd, because it doesn't fit into the little box. But I mean, Fright Fest is subheading is the dark heart of cinema. And I think that's probably a more accurate reflection of what horror is. It's sort of, it's investigating these darker aspects of our psyche and, you know, how our minds work and engaging with them on that level, which then opens it up to be anything. You know, you can have your comedy horror, your sci-fi horror, your slashes, your body horrors. Yeah, I don't buy into this. It's got to be full of a ton of jump scares, or, you know, I've got to not be able to sleep that night. That's not what horror is. Horror is obviously reflecting back something that we might not want to deal with and making us sort of face that head on. I think that for me is what makes a horror film.
Yes, no, 100%. I'm strongly in agreement with you there. But I like that it kind of prefaces one of my questions as well, which you've already nicely answered, which is the whole thing of, you know, you do see that a lot, that someone will say, oh, X film wasn't a good horror film because it didn't scare me. And I just find that attitude so like reductive and limiting, because it is, it's like a very binary thinking of putting things in boxes, and if it doesn't fit this neat little box, then ergo it wasn't good or successful. And everything is subjective, like, you know, what scares one person could mean nothing to another, and vice versa. Like, for example, I'm very much a polyamorous individual, so most rom-coms in a way can be horrors, because it's all about monogamy, and I'm just like, your situation could be easily resolved if you just went, hey, let's, you know, date everyone. But no. Anyway, but like, in a way, I think everyone has their own subjective horrors, what makes something scary or not. And I like that you mentioned jump scares as well, because I wonder if it kind of like, because certain horror films and like certain genres have their almost like quote unquote predictable tropes or predictable beats that it kind of goes certain ways. So if almost if someone's like goes in knowing something will happen at a certain point or predicts a jump scare, they think it's not good because it was predictable. And it's just like, well, no, it's just, that's just what it's doing. It does it effectively. And, you know, it might not work for you, but it works for someone else. But stemming from that, like, kind of, I think it's a similar attitude to the whole horror has to be scary to be good. I see this a lot as well, that there is this type of like subset of horror fan that kind of is saying there's no good horror movies anymore, that they don't make them like they used to. And I think that's kind of like a kind of like maybe from like a rose colored nostalgia glasses, as in, these films scared me when I was a teenager, and therefore I'm not a teenager anymore, and films that are coming out now aren't having the same effect. And also, possibly a big portion of it, I'm a cisgender straight white man, and I'm no longer the focus of stories. But I want to know what you think, like, where that attitude comes from of the people who say that we're not getting good horror movies anymore.
Well, I definitely think that they're not educating themselves properly, because there are plenty of good things. They've changed, yes, but they kind of needed to. I mean, there was so many films in the 80s which were just about, you know, butchering women, and, you know, thankfully for the most part films have moved on from that. And I think that there is, again, the same sort of camp who are, oh, it's got to be scary. Also then, well, if it's not scary, it's got to be excessively bloody, and there's got to be a load of people like chopped to pieces. And that, again, is, there's been a shift away from that. I mean, you've got films like Terrifier and the new Terrifier 2 that's coming out, which do hark back to that. But I'm quite happy that we're not doing that anymore, because it was, it did, obviously, a lot of them, when you look back, as much as they've got the final girl and that, a lot of kills in quite a few slashes are very misogynistic, and it's just quite nice that, you know, there's any film like that these days, there is more equal, you know, there's more equal level playing field with, you know, men and women being killed, you know, other characters other than the man can be killers, other characters other than the white girl can be the ones who survive. And I think it's good. Yeah, they're not the same, but everything has to change, because otherwise, you know, I don't know, we wouldn't have learned to fly or gone to space or anything if we'd have all just sort of like sat down in like the 50s and gone, yeah, no, this is fine. Then, we'd be watching the same, five films over and over. And it's, because I think the other aspect is that there's different voices making the films now. Again, it was, as we say, it's very, straight white, man behind the camera. And now there are new voices coming out who are able to tell their stories. And that won't obviously align with some audiences because, their political or, not, social views won't align. But to just blanket say, oh, there's no good films anymore, it's like, well, no, look out there, educate yourselves. Because it's like there's this whole argument as well about, there's no, oh, women aren't making horror. Or, when one film that happens to have a female director performs well, they're like, oh, women can make films now. So women have been making horror films, for decades. I mean, you've got like Mary Lambert, who would have made the Pet Sematary and Pet Sematary 2, and they're not a token gesture anymore. The last 10 years, there's been so many female directors, but because people aren't educating themselves, they see like Censor come out and they're like, oh, or Raw or Tutanka, oh, women can do this. It's like women have been doing this. It just, you've only just sort of realized, you dig deep enough, you're going to have seen a lot more films that have been directed by women. You just didn't educate yourself at the time.
100%. And I think that's really what it is. It's like not educating. And I think it probably also stems from this type of like almost like a kind of a gatekeeping attitude type thing of like, the type of quote unquote horror bro who thinks horror is just for them, and that, women can't enjoy horror or queer people can't enjoy horror. So therefore, when like a film does well and is like, acclaimed and it's directed by someone that isn't a straight white man, they're kind of like, oh, someone can do it well. And it's just like, they have been. You've just been limiting yourself so much. Like, that's what it is. It's a refusal to want to be educated. And also, it's just, again, it comes down to binary thinking. Things are either good or bad. And it's like, no, dismantle binaries. We need to be more fluid in our thinking.
But I also think that the horror isn't necessarily made for those people. Okay, there's the genre where it is just, people being butchered or whatever, which some element of that might enjoy because it puts them into, well, it maintains them into their position of power. But, I feel that horror has always been for, women and other and queer people and that, because it's analyzing the freaks, the outsiders, and who can identify with that more than people who themselves feel on the fringes of society. So I think that horror has been, and so obviously you say rom-coms have got strong female characters or whatever, but when you dig into a lot of the more famous, more iconic rom-coms, those female characters aren't that strong because at the end of the day, they needed that man by the end of the film to complete themselves. So it's only really the horror genre that gave us these strong female characters. You move across to the sci-fi horror and you've got your Sarah Connors and your Ellen Ripley's, but then you've in horror you've got your Laurie Strode's and you've got your you've got your Gail Weathers and your Sidney Prescott's and things. So they that is where I mean, particularly that was where my role models stemmed from, and I think it's a similar feeling for those of different sexualities as well. They can see the otherness in the films and relate to them. So yeah, I'm sorry, like cis white men, but it's that they're not all for you. They've never been for you. It's just you've taken for granted that they were.
100%. And like, I'm very much like a big kind of, fan of the statement of like horror is inherently queer and like inherently, disabled, because like it's for those marginalized communities. And, a lot of the time, yes, it can be subtextual, and it's something that someone who isn't of those communities isn't necessarily going to pick up on, but that doesn't mean it isn't there. Like, particularly when you're thinking about the films, if we're talking specifically about horror that came out during the Hays Code era, like, you weren't allowed to depict queerness in any way, but they were still there. You just had to know where to look for them. And yeah, like, definitely, like, which I think is also like why, queer horror fans, and I'd say a lot of like, straight women horror fans as well, probably in some ways found some identity with a lot of the queer-coded villains because they were the ones that, were more complex and interesting than the kind of just cookie-cutter characters. Like, these were the ones that felt more human, even if they were a villain. But yeah, no, I think definitely, like, horror has always been for the other and for the outsider. And I think it stems probably from, and this is something I'm seeing a lot now with a lot of people who are engaging with horror films and just media in general. Now, I don't know if it's just like an online thing, like a Twitter thing, or if it's like genuinely out in the world, but like I think they're that attitude of like people who don't notice the queerness in horror or don't notice the strength in the women characters. I think a lot of that stems from a lack of just critical analysis skills and media literacy. And I think we're seeing a lot of that now too. Like, I feel like a lot of people when they're engaging with films, like, I'm kind of like, have you turned your brain on to engage with this film? Because like your reading of it is very off. Like, and I want to know what you think about that. Do you think that there is like a general lack of kind of media literacy when it comes to people engaging with horror? And like the reason that I'm kind of like where that question's coming from is I feel like in general, a lot of the media we're getting, films, TV shows, has become very sanitized and almost desexualized in a way, but it feels like the horror genre is still kind of rejecting that. And I want to know what you think about that. Do you think there is something going on there?
Yeah, so the generation coming up are the ones that have had, social media and everything since birth. And it's almost that because they've had it, they don't know how to interact with it. I mean, they're watching films differently, they are watching it at home, streamed on the laptop, probably in their bedroom, like on their own, whilst they're on the phone chatting to their friends. So they're not consuming it properly. They're only sort of casually watching it just from that respect, unless you're sat there in a cinema and properly focused on it. So I do think it's very easy for messages and things in films to get overlooked just in terms of that. And I just sort of look at the way that media jump on certain horror films for it's I mean, like Titan or Titane, however the preferred pronunciation is. Yeah, it's billed as this, this gross whatever horror film, but again, going back to the horror with horror, it's not. It's I don't know, it to me it was like a weird coming of person story
Yeah, it was
that
what? Go
it
ahead.
really it really resonated with me on a lot of levels, but there is that contingent who will just look at it and remember the scenes with the car, and that's what all the media was focusing on. Oh, it's this, it's depraved, it's this, it's that, it's the other. But it's actually a really beautiful film. I mean, my brother is a trans man. And there was just something about that film that sort of spoke to me in terms like that in a way is the journey that he is currently on. He's only 17, so he's still going through everything. And it was just I sort of connected to it on that level that I wasn't necessarily expecting when I first went in, because all I had heard from the review other reviews and stuff
Was that it
was
was the car fucking movie? Like,
yeah
that's
it was
all I had
yeah
heard.
yeah Yeah.
And I wasn't expecting this like beautiful transgressive exploration of what gender is. Like, it was like yes, there were definitely like one or two scenes in the film that like I was squirming in my seat because I was uncomfortable with it, because again, it comes back to body horror, which is something that squicks me out. But that doesn't mean like that it makes the film a film that isn't worthy of respect, or not a good film that has a powerful message behind it. But again, that I think comes back down to horror is like inherently queer, like, because like that film just has that bleeding throughout it. And I think if you don't have any way to relate to those type of like issues or struggles, like either in that you're queer yourself or that you're an ally and have queer family. Like if you don't have that in your life, then yeah, those messages aren't gonna come across to you. All you'll see is the car fucking movie. You won't actually see the beautiful story behind it. And yeah, that like I've only seen it the once when it came out in cinema, but it's still on my brain because it's that powerful of a film. Like, and I'm definitely looking forward to revisiting it. But yes, I think there is, I like that point that you make about the way younger generations are engaging with the media. Like, I think that's actually something that I hadn't really probably even kind of thought about because that's so true that, and like it, I think it links to the fact that nowadays, like, you know, movies and films and TV are all like considered quote unquote content. And, you know, and it's just kind of like, no, like, this is art. Like, you know, we're supposed to appreciate it as an art form. Like, it's not content, it's not bite-sized like media. But yeah, and I think just the mention of social media, like, I feel as a broader social, like not just the upcoming generation, but just the broader society thing. Like, I think that's probably partially responsible for why there's a lot of sanitization in the media we're getting because social media doesn't allow any form of like adult self-expression. Like, it's very, you know, essentially in a way puritanical. Like, you know, you can't, unless you're like a famous celebrity that, like, you know, gets lots of traction onto a platform. You can't be have any form of self-expression. And I think that's now trickling into the media that we're getting because media is reflecting that. So yeah, it's a, I'm kind of like not really sure where the future of our media is going to go if it's being so heavily influenced by what we're allowed to express as humans in a society. But stemming from that and kind of linking back to kind of horror cinema, this is a question where I'm always like flip-flopping. I never know really how to answer it and where to plant my flag. But I want to know what you feel about like censorship when it comes to horror cinema and I guess art in general. Like, do you think that there's lines that what is acceptable to represent or to portray, and if you go beyond it, you shouldn't? Or do you think art is art and shouldn't be censored? Like, where do you fall on that camp?
Well, I mean, I think the BBFC have done some great work, especially with safeguarding younger people. And to me, it's like, well, as long as the people who are watching the content are aware, because obviously there's 15, 18, unrated or X-rated or whatever, either then okay, it's up to that individual. So I don't necessarily have an issue with censorship on that. On that front, as in, you know, you can, okay, I know I'm going to go and watch this X-rated, but I am, you know, I am an adult and I, you know, that is what I want to watch. But it's, I think it's more the distributors, I guess, in this respect. It's the cutting stuff to get a certain rating. You know, there's been the 18 horror film has kind of been abandoned because that doesn't make money because you've already like slashed your audience that can legally go and watch it, and so therefore they will chop it down to be a 15. I mean, I think the most recent instance of that is Fall, which closed Fright Fest in America. They cut out all of the F-bombs so that they could get it down to a PG-13, so essentially a, you know, a 12A, a 12A/15 over there, so it could make some money. But to me, that's one of that's not what Scott Mann intended when he made that film. It will still make money. Okay, it won't make as much money, but it will still push. And if anything, you know, it's more likely to push a few more people in because they know it hasn't been diluted. Because I think now, especially in America, there'll be a market of people that are like, oh, what, that film that's been cut? No, I'm not going to go watch that. You know, I'll wait for it to come out on like DVD, and then they'll have, you know, reinstated it, and I'll watch it then. I think that's sort of where my issue with censorship comes down, is the fact that, as with everything else, it's become monetized, and now there are films that you can't see as were intended because they want to make some more money. I mean, I used to work for Lionsgate, and I remember when Nerve came out, which is like a teen thriller with Emma Roberts. It was a 15, but the company really wanted it to be a 12A, and there was a lot of back and forth with the BBFC. The BBFC held their ground, which I think was the right decision, because if you chopped out everything that they wanted to chop out to get it down to a 12A, you would have lost everything that made it an exciting film, and it would have just been another bland, generic sort of teen drama that just wouldn't have worked.
That's such a good point, and I really like the mention of like the writing system, and because I've had like one or two guests who've kind of had similar thoughts, and I think that's kind of like where I would kind of lie as well, like because then you're not actually dictating what you know someone like what you think someone is allowed to watch. You're just more saying, look, this content is of a more mature nature, but once you kind of like it's more about judging a maturity thing. And at the end of the day as well, I think you know this is where when say like parental figures and guardians come in, because like you know you would hope that you know parents like know their children like as who they are as individual beings. And so some kids that are like you know under what the rating says is allowed could be more mature and could like handle more mature themes, whereas other people who could actually be of the rating might not be able to handle those themes because everyone's different. So I think when it comes to say if it's like a 15 film but a kid is a 12-year-old, then that parent can like you know watch the thing first and make that decision of oh yeah, I think my kid would actually be okay with this, and then take them to it. So yeah, I think like my problem with censorship is when it's like someone is, you know, as you said, making that decision of cutting something or kind of dictating that, oh, I don't think this should exist at all for anyone, rather than we'll slap a rating on it and then it's down to that person's personal choice. They can trust themselves as to what they're able to watch. But just the mention of like what they've done with Fall to cut it down, like I find that so. Like the fact that like swear words are considered something that can dictate what a film's rating is, like I've never understood that. Like I'm just like, yeah, like especially like I'm a huge comic book nerd. I love the Marvel films. I love the you know, so I'm a big fan of those. But I always find it so strange that it's like, you know, we can't have swear words, but we can have like countless hundreds of people that are like squashed by buildings or are killed, but because it's not on screen and you don't see blood, it's okay. And I find like I'm just like, how is like excessive violence more acceptable than swear words? Like, yeah, but I don't know if that's just a uniquely American thing or if there is this weird generational attitude of, oh no, swear words are bad. We don't want our kids knowing them. Like, yeah, I just, yeah, it's always baffled me.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel that the 12A certificate is one of the worst things that the United Kingdom ever did. I worked in the cinema a couple of years after it first came into play, and it's just an excuse for parents to not pay the babysitter anymore. That, I mean, I went to see Gareth Edwards' Monsters, which was a 12A, and somebody had like their 1-year-old in there, and it's like that kid's not going to take in that film. I mean, I've been to see, 2 or 3 hour like dramas that are 12As, and people have brought their 4 and 5 year olds to it, and they've obviously been bored to tears because it's not made for them. That's not who that is. Even the Marvel films, which have got superheroes and stuff in, when they're like 2.5 hours long, that's a long time for a kid to sit there. There's a lot of talking in these films. Kids, there's a re U's and PG's are made for a child's attention span. 12As are just, they just feel very much like a reason that you don't have to like pay for your babysitter anymore, because you can just bring the kid along. Again, it gets the cinema more money. And in doing that, they've killed the 12. I mean, Titanic was a 12. In a 12, you could have mild nudity. There's the whole painting scene with Kate Winslet. That's a 12. That doesn't exist anymore. So that would now have to be a 15 or willies and nipples. And I just think it's because when it comes out on Home End, it's back to a 12. They haven't followed through the 12A. And it just, yeah, I just feel that it's really, because I mean, The Dark Knight was a 12A, but The Dark Knight is really intense in places, and to the point of it's probably borderline 15, but they managed to eke it through. And we had to, because I was working at the cinema at the time, we had to give customers warnings when they had young children. And I remember my, so I met my husband when I was working there. This woman, she turned up with her, like a 9-year-old son and a 6-year-old daughter, and he was like, "Just to let you know, there's some really intense scenes. You know, there's a lot. There's some facial disfigurement that's like really intense and that." And she was like, "I know what I'm doing. Blah blah blah. It's a comic book film. They'll be fine." Cut to 2 hours later, the little girl is in hysterical floods of tears on the gate, and the woman's demanding her money back because she's got to leave and can't watch the film. And it's like, well, we did try and tell you, but if it had just been a 15, then those kids wouldn't have been able to get in. And the parents just go, "Oh well, they fail to factor in that it's people younger than 12 can watch it with an adult, as opposed to it's fine for people under 12 to watch it." I think that's the distinction that the general public don't get with a 12A, so they just bring them along to absolutely anything. You know, kids don't want to watch like Mother's Day, and so they, you know, they it's but it's but they can, so they do.
It's such a good point, and like particularly like the Dark Knight as well, like, or just really any of the Nolan Batman films, like, they lean into a lot of horror elements in many of the scenes because they come from the Dark Knight comics, which lean into horror, like, you know. And oh, but also just when you said, like, oh, it's a comic book, like, that type of attitude is something that I find so. But again, I think it's like similar with the way certain people have attitudes about horror films. It's like some people have certain like entrenched attitudes about comic book films, like they have, and it stems from this, like, again, it's a lack of education. It's this, someone has an idea of what a comic book film is and thinks that every comic book film is the same, and someone has a certain idea of what a horror film is and thinks every horror film is the same. And it's like, no, they're expansive genres. Like, yes, comic book films can be the Tim Burton Batmans, which are just high camp fun. But comic book films are also the Deadpool movies and The Boys, which are excessively gory and violent and not for kids. Like, so it's like, but with horror, like, I just, yeah, it annoys me when someone has this blinkers on attitude of like everything is the same just because it's a certain genre. And it's like, no. And like you said, with even with the MCU films, a lot of those deal with themes that younger kids wouldn't be able to understand. And it's like, why are you forcing your tiny child to sit through this like 2.5 hour movie just because you want to watch it in the cinema? But yeah, I forgot about the 12A rating thing because I tend to not seek those films out much anymore. So yeah, I forgot that that was a thing and brought back memories. But like, kind of jumping on from that, I want to know where you kind of lie with this one, because this is one of those questions that intensely interests me as well. When it comes to like horror films and I guess just movies in general, but like, do you think the concept of like the death of the author can be applied to horror films? Like, as in, is the filmmaker's intent more important than a viewer's reading of it or a viewer's takeaway from a film? Like, I want to know what you think on that.
I mean, I think it's probably depends on the film, but I mean, whatever the director's intent is, everybody's going to interpret the film differently. I think we probably have moved away from a time where the author spelled everything out. Like something like Psycho, you know, Hitchcock completely tells you exactly what you're supposed to be feeling and when you're supposed to be feeling it. But I feel like we have drifted away from that in some respects. I mean, I guess there's probably certain directors wherein you know what you're in for, so you maybe don't go in expecting, but you expect, you know, like I guess sort of your Conjuring films or whatever, the Conjuring universe, you kind of know before you go in exactly what you're going to get with one of those films. So I don't think you necessarily have to read too much into it, but I definitely think that filmmakers are, at least within the indie horror circuit, are more open to a back and forth with the audience these days than maybe they would have been before.
Oh, interesting. I like that. And I think, like, I'd agree. Like, I don't know. I say this as someone who doesn't make movies, who doesn't publish art. So obviously, my perspective on it is a very different one. But I do like that type of open discussion engagement of, as you said, someone has a reading of the piece of art and the creator kind of goes, oh, that's really interesting. I'd like to explore where that reading comes from, rather than this kind of, again, blinkers on, no, this is what I intended. This was what I said. You just read it wrong. Like, I think I like those more nuanced discussions. Because at the end of the day, I think like sometimes a lot of filmmakers might not even be aware of what they're putting into a story because so much of our existence as humans is subconscious existence. So like there could be something that is part of your psyche that you're not aware of that ends up coming through in a film. And then it's out there. And even if you might not have been intended to put it there, but it's there. But stemming from that, like a slightly related question, because this is one that I think a lot of horror fans have to kind of almost grapple with, but I want to know where you lie with the whole art versus artist thing. Like, do you think that we can separate a film from a filmmaker, or do you think that once there is a problematic filmmaker, you can't separate? Like, what do you think?
I think it definitely becomes difficult. I mean, there's for example, there's a new Jeepers Creepers film that's about to come out. It has nothing to do with the Victor, is it Victor
Yeah,
Salvas?
Victor Salva, yeah.
It has nothing to do with him, but it is born of his franchise, and that. I literally got a press release about it yesterday, and it's like, well, I'm probably not going to review that just because I don't know,
Just makes
I
you
don't
kind of
want to
feel
be,
icky.
yeah, it's like, I mean, I sort of was a big Lost Prophets fan, like when they were big, and then all of the stuff came out about that, and now I can't listen to their music anymore because it just feels wrong. And I feel that when it comes to problematic filmmakers, there has to be an element of distancing, because otherwise you almost feel in a way that you're championing that person, you're giving voice to that person that doesn't really deserve it. So I think that's probably my personal thing, especially like with the Jeepers Creepers series. It's, I mean, thankfully it was one I was never particularly in love with, but I haven't watched the th since the new the news has come to light. I've not watched the third one. I won't be watching the next one. And I know, like, Fright Fest had adverts for that new one, and it just felt a bit like, really, like, in this, like, should we? I get that it's a horror film, and it's not, he hasn't had any direct involvement with it, but it's still, those lines are still a bit blurry. And because also you don't know the experiences of those around you, and if you're there going like, oh yeah, I want to watch this new film, you don't know how your friend or family member is interpreting your
Your
response
response.
to, are you then saying that that's okay? But yeah, it's definitely a very murky murky line to tread.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, and it's one of the ones that, again, I'm always like kind of like, kind of like flip-flopping on. And like, I think ultimately at the end of the day, my stance tends to be there is a difference between like engaging with the art as a piece of art versus commercially supporting someone who's problematic. Like, so the one example that I always return to is J.K. Rowling and the Harry Potter world. Like, I'm not going to judge another queer or trans person who still is able to find beauty and magic in the Harry Potter world because it was so impactful for them as they were growing up. But if someone is to kind of like go and buy the new Harry Potter game, for example, which is going to financially support J.K. Rowling, that's making a decision, and I'll probably side-eye you then. Like, you know, so I
Yeah.
think there's a difference between, like, or in the same, like, say, Roman Polanski and Rosemary's Baby, for example. Like, that film, you know, if you already own a copy of the film, or if it's been out, you know, I'm not going to say you shouldn't watch it anymore just because Polanski was involved with it, but if a new film of his was coming out and you're first in line to get tickets,
Yeah.
then that's again slightly different. So yeah, I think it's really nuanced, and it comes down to every, like, you know, and I think everyone's entitled to make their own decisions. Like, at, you know, at the end of the day, you know, if someone's continuing to engage with something, like even say the Jeepers Creepers films, like I can't really bring myself to rewatch them, because knowing what Victor Salva's done, and also how much of, I guess, his icky hands were on the making of
Yeah.
those worlds, I can't unsee it. Like, you can kind of, like, there's a lot of kind of leery and lecherous views of young boys in these films, and there's a reason for that. So I personally can't, you know, go to revisit them. If someone else, like, watched it when they were a young teenager and it became one of their rewatchable horror films, I'm not going to say they shouldn't, like, you know, because I can't make that call. I won't for myself, but I won't say someone shouldn't. But if it's something new that's going to financially benefit a problematic person, then I'll probably side-eye you. That tends to be my stance. But, like, I think if we, like, you know, push it further, and it was one of the things that you actually kind of commented on when I tweeted that I had recently watched, like, Scream 3, and now in the light of everything with Harvey Weinstein, that film takes on an extra kind of weight of, like, oh, this is more powerful than it might have been at the time. But, like, if we look at, say, Weinstein, like, you know, he was involved as, like, you know, an executive producer with so many films. If we say, oh, he's an incredibly problematic person, you shouldn't watch anything he's involved with, that's a lot of horror films that are
Yeah,
off the
it is.
table.
Yeah.
And a lot of good horror films that people are engaged with. So yeah, I think it's there. I don't think you can be black and white with it. Like, I think
No.
it's really nuanced, and I think it really depends, like, on a person's own preference, like, of what they are comfortable to engage with. But I do think there is a difference between, I don't care about parting with my money to support this person, because yeah, that's different. But yeah, no, thank you for that. I'm very much picking up a lot of what you're picking up there. But as a last kind of closing off kind of topic question, this is the one I always like to send off with, because I just love everyone's different answers. But for yourself, like, are there any, and even though it's almost like an oxymoron of a question, but are there any comfort horror films for you? Like, if you've had a shit day or a shit week, like, what are the films that you'll just return to because you know you're going to have a good time with it?
I think it's stuff like just like The Craft and I Know What You Did Last Summer, they're sort of, quite nice, sort of disengaged brain to a certain degree. I mean, I'm just so familiar with them because I've watched them so many times. But the Saw franchise, has always been one that I've been drawn to. It sort of it came out when I was at uni, but then each year me and my mum would sort of like meet up at around Halloween and would go to watch the new one, and I'd spend the days preceding rewatching them. So I think by the time Saw 7 came out, I had a week of Saw. So Saw, yeah, the Saw franchise is a big sort of one that I can go back to time and time again. Candyman, the original Candyman, is just, I think I read the film as a romance in a way, which is, I don't necessarily know if that's
I
what was
think,
intended, because he's,
yeah, I think there could be a reading of that there. Like, well, maybe it's just because, like, Tony Todd is just so charismatic that it's just kind of like, please sweep me off my feet. There could be an element of that, like, but I like, from my rewatches of it, like, I think that there's some element of that bubbling under the surface as well, like almost like a gothic romance type thing.
Yeah, it's that sort of Dracula thing where she happens to look like the woman who he was in love with when he was attacked and murdered. So it's like she's the reincarnation of his love, and that was how. I mean, my romantic films are Terminator and Starship Troopers, And so Candyman just sort of fit in there. It's Starship Troopers. It's Diz Enrico, not Carmen Enrico. I think so we can all sort of identify with that unrequited love, and I think Diz does that so well. I mean, she's very open about the fact that she likes him from the start, but he's interested in Carmen, and then eventually they get together, and then it's tragic because, no sooner they're together than they're ripped apart. But yeah, and I think another sort of comfort horror, again, another Barker, is Hellraiser, but also Return of the Living Dead 3. I really like Return of the Living Dead 3. I watched it. We found it in my mum's cupboard when I was having like a party, and we found it and we watched it, and it was just so sort of like stupid. And one of my friends was terrified of it and said, "This is really silly." And it's like a really broken Romeo and Juliet. He brings his girlfriend back from the dead and, loves her even though all she wants to do is eat people. And it's, I don't know, I revisit it time and time again, and I think that Melinda Clark did a great turn there. And then she went on to play Julie Cooper in The OC, which just sort of boggled my mind, because her character in Return of the Living Dead is also called Julie, and is from not too far away from the sort of life where Julie Cooper's backstory is. So in a weird way, I've always sort of seen
It's a
those two
connected
characters,
universe.
as being connected in some warped way. But yeah, I mean, Donnie Darko's sort of horror adjacent, that's one I can go back to. Daniel Isn't Real, that's sort of a recent addition. But yeah, there's
Yeah,
just
it's a nice kind of cleansing palette of different films. Like, I like that. But also, I just love that like little anecdote you said about the Return of the Living Dead 3, because I think in some ways we always like have those, like if you have like a memory of how you watched a film, it can almost make the film become better in a way. Like, for example, one of the films that I always return to and really enjoy is The Descent, because the first time I watched that was with a group of friends at Halloween for a birthday party, and just so many people like freaking out at the really scary bits in that film. So now when I rewatch it, it makes me think of that really great experience. So I just love the way that horror fans can engage with film in that way. Like, to me, it feels like more so than like other types of like genres. Like, horror films are really the ones that you can have those specific film watching experiences compared to other types of mainstream genres, I guess. But yeah, no, that's a really like nice list of films there. So as like a last kind of closing off question, like, because I'm always like interested to hear di people's different perspectives on this, but like, what are your kind of like, how are you feeling about the future of horror as someone who engages with it as a fan, but also as like a critic? Like, are you hopeful for where horror is going, or do you think like the pendulum might swing back and we're going to almost go more regressive? Like, what do you think about the future of horror?
I think since the pandemic, horror has been the best performing genre at the box office. I think I've spoken to a lot of filmmakers over the last couple of years, and it's that thing where if the horror isn't that you can watch to escape, that you can escape your problems. It's like, as bad as things might be, you can stick on a horror film and go, "Well, at least it's not that bad." And I definitely think that's something that the pandemic has done, because I think a lot of people might have thought that comedies or rom-coms and things would have done really well, but nobody wants to sit and watch, this perfect world where they've got the job that they want, they've got all this money. That's not going to make anybody feel better. But sitting down with a horror really sort of opens up the avenue in a way to be like, well, it could be worse. This could be happening to me. And I kind of hope that people who wouldn't necessarily have linked to horror will now see the benefits of it. And whilst I think studio horror is probably, I'm not quite sure about the future of that, because they do seem to have settled into their groove. They know what they want to make. Everything's got to be a universe now. So it's the Conjuring universe, and or films that are like this film that did really well. I'm not quite sure where the originality's gone. And then you've got stuff like Prey, and at least in the UK, potentially even Barbarian, that will go straight to streaming because, oh, what if people don't
Yeah.
go to watch it? And that's disappointing. But independent horror is so good. I mean, that's kind of what I champion with my writing. I'd happily go and watch the studio horrors. I'm always happy for an invite, but it's the more independent ones because they're the ones that are doing the interesting ideas. And that's why covering something like Fright Fest I always enjoy. I mean, I've seen so many good, interesting, different films this last month that if they were all studio films on the Fright Fest lineup, I don't think you would have had that variety at all. It would have all been very similar. But the fact that Fright Fest are open to first-time filmmakers and lots of different voices, there's a lot of good things. And I think that's what Shudder as well. Shudder then scoop support of these independent films from the festivals and puts them onto this platform. We just sort of need Shudder to again sort of be taken out of its box because it obviously is seen as people as, oh, that's just horror films, that's just scary films. But again, Shudder has it has your jump scares, but then it also has something like Violation, which is a very different sort of horror film. So I'm hopeful for independent horror. I'm not so sure about studio horror.
Yeah, I think that's a very good distinction. Like, I think you're actually the kind of the first person to kind of actually distinguish as in like their studio horror and independent horror, like separating them, because I think that is important. But yeah, like with our Shudders or our Arrows and stuff like that, like these places that are kind of like championing independent horror or like, less of the big budget horror films, it's a good thing. And I definitely that bodes well, at least for where things will go. Yeah, studio horror, yeah, it's gonna be what it is, but it's more the independent that's more hopeful. But I think it's like you always just wish as well that the more independent ones would get those big kind of cinema treatments, because like there's some films that I've seen because of Shudder that I'm just like, oh, I wish I had seen this in a cinema. It feels like it was designed for a theater. But yeah, there's hope there. But no, that's a good resounding message to end up this conversation on. So thanks again for joining me, Kat. It's been really enjoyable talking horror with you. And before I let you go, where can people find you and support your work?
So I am on all socials at Gizmo Shikari. There's a link on all of my profiles to all of my writings. So yeah, just head to socials and find and follow me there.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
And to my listeners, keep your eyes and ears peeled for future episodes that are releasing in my Why Horror series.